What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line is the one and only Josh Cohen. He is on the show. What's going on, bro?
Oh, you know, just that time of year, March Madness, getting ready for the Masters, springtime, daylight savings time. It's feeling like we're starting to come out of the pandemic a little bit. It's starting to feel a little bit like normal.
What's it been like down there in West Palm Beach for the pandemic? Because I'm up here in St. Pete, and I would say March and April, we were shut down. But once May happened, I think it was like May 8th when barbershops could begin opening up to me. That was when it ended for St. Pete.
Yeah. No. I mean, we shut down like everybody else. For me, pandemic probably lasted a little longer than others because I was in a car wreck. So in the midst of lockdown, my car wreck caused me to break my neck. So I was stuck home for 7 weeks anyway in the neck brace. But as far as rest of civilization, slowly but surely. And, you know, now if you go out, like at last week I was on St. Patrick's Day, or even Friday night, a lot of West Palm Beach, you'd never know the pandemic was still happening. You don't see a lot of folks wearing masks. You don't see a lot of folks, you know, following protocol like we were a couple of months ago. So some people would like to pretend that it's over, which may be unfortunate, but regardless, that's how they're living.
It seems like it's like this part of the year is when everybody gets reckless, because I remember it was during spring break when like Governor was not shutting down Florida and then everybody got mad, and then it seemed like right when spring break ended last year, that's when we shut down. It was weird how it all happened.
Well, I mean, college kids thought, well, we got to get this in. You know, it's our spring break. We're going to get this in regardless. And you can probably understand where they're coming from. A lot of people at that point didn't believe the virus was real. They didn't believe 500,000 Americans would die. It was still a political issue. If you listened to and believed the President of the United States, it was no big deal. It was going to basically vanish, as he said. It wouldn't be a problem. So he lied. He was wrong. And unfortunately, a lot of people believed that, bought into that, or led themselves to believe that that's what they wanted to hear. But, you know, college kids were going to have spring break regardless. So they did. You know how viruses work. There's a reason they call things going viral. Whether they be videos or people, or obviously diseases, based on the idea of a virus doing just that. So we kind of got what we asked for. We kind of got what we deserved.
So there's been a lot of emotion wherever you go out and about. Like, you can see a lot of Karens freaking out, just everyday things, going to Publix, whatnot, going to a bar. You see a bunch of bros that don't care. And I know you're really good at reading body language. You're a body language expert. So often when you're bored at like a bar or you're waiting in line at Publix, is it fun to kind of like look and just see what people are thinking?
Well, reading body language, you know, reading nonverbal tells is a lot more difficult for some people because everyone's wearing a mask. And we do read so much out of people's lips and their mouth and how they position their tongue. You know, a lot of emphasis placed on the face when reading nonverbals. But the reality is, if you pay attention to people's feet and the width of their stance, if you pay attention to their legs, pay attention to their arms and their hands, you know a whole lot more about what they're thinking, about what they're feeling, about what they're wanting or fearing than you can by just a facial expression. We're pretty good at faking facial expressions. We're pretty good at acting surprised or acting shocked or even acting sad or happy. You know, if someone gives you a terrible gift, you are pretty good at pretending on your face and you're excited about it and grateful for it. But your nonverbals, like I said, from your feet to your legs to your stance, the positioning of your arms and hands, they say a whole lot more. But yeah, I'm constantly reading nonverbals of people, not just that are communicating with me or attempting to BS me, but those that, you know, just in public, like you mentioned, it's a lot of fun to notice that a first date's not going real well, or that a guy maybe is doing better than he thought he was, or to watch someone trying sell or upsell someone who's telling them that they're interested, but clearly indicating in their nonverbals that they're wasting that salesperson's time. So, yeah, I mean, it's a science that anybody can learn, and I probably would recommend for any and everyone to learn nonverbals, a.k.a. body language, so you can save time, save money, not be embarrassed. You know, can you think of a more useful skill that you can learn than knowing what people are actually thinking? Probably not. It's like a superhero, the ability to read someone's mind. On a lot of platforms, it's the equivalent.
So, for example, what are like the cues out there for people? Because I'm in a relationship, so I don't have to deal with going out on dates anymore. But I went on so many dates back when I was single. What was some things you would do when you were on first dates where you could just pick up that the chick wasn't worth your time? She was crazy. She wasn't into you.
Right. Well, I mean, when you're meeting someone for the first time, you can tell a lot by their nonverbals, the body language they give off. For example, take a look at their feet. If you're talking to a girl in a bar, in a club, in a restaurant, and she's with friends or other people, and you're both standing, what are the position of her feet? If they're pointed towards you, she's engaged in what it is you have to say. If she has a foot turned out, or her feet are actually turned out, you know, that is a subconscious tell. We don't realize we're doing it. The thing about body language is we all do it. We all give the same tells. That's why it's a science. Blind children give off the same tells and indicators as seeing people do. People from Asia or people from Europe or people from Afghanistan or from St. Petersburg, Florida, all give off the same indicators. Because we don't learn body language from watching others. We don't acquire it from learning. It's not a nurture, skill. All of our nonverbals are programmed. They're in our limbic brain. Same as our reflexes, and they've been there for millions of years. So that's why we react the same way, regardless of where we live, regardless of how old we are with our nonverbal tells. That's why they tell the same story, even for someone who's never seen, been blind their entire life. They give off the same tell. So if you are trying to talk to a girl in a bar, take a look at, again, the positioning of her feet. If they're facing towards you, well, she's engaged in what you're saying. If they're turned away from you, or foot's turned out, she's being polite to you, but there's somewhere else she'd rather be, and where that is, where the foot is pointing. Also, take a look at the position of the stance. How close together are someone's feet? People don't realize they're doing this, but they brace themselves as opposed to being comfortable. When we're comfortable, our feet are closer together. In fact, a woman standing talking to you, if she's comfortable with you, if she, you know, is just meeting you and comfortable with you, she may have her feet super close together, or even 1 foot crossed across the front of the other. That's super comfort. When we are less comfortable, we widen our stance. Think about if you believe there's going to be a fight. Think about if you believe that there may be a problem, that someone may have a problem with you. You widen your stance as you would in a fight to brace yourself, right? To prepare yourself for conflict, to steady yourself. You're obviously with a wider base, whether you're in MMA or someone in a bar and a drunk guy starting a problem, you're much more apt when you feel a threat to automatically widen that bridge. You don't think to yourself, oh my God, this could be a problem. I better steady myself. I better widen my stance. It's just an automatic thing. Again, the limbic brain is telling you to do it. You're probably not even aware that you're doing it. Another thing that is commonly misconstrued, that, you know, men's magazines like Maxim, and back in the day, FHM and others for years would talk about how you can tell she's into you. What are the tells? What are the indicators? And they would often talk about a woman playing with her hair. Well, the reality is that is not necessarily an indicator she's into you. That's a comforting behavior. That is a self-soothing behavior. And we all do it. If we have hair, we all do it, male and female, oftentimes to comfort ourselves, oftentimes to ventilate any we're feeling severe stress. A man will run his fingers through his hair front to back, which is a ventilating tell, which tells us he's feeling stress and pressure. A woman will do so oftentimes with longer hair by grasping her hair from the back and picking it up almost as if she's going to pull a ponytail and then waving it up and down. That is a ventilating process. But playing with your hair doesn't mean that you're interested. It can be a self-soothing behavior. Once again, that is just a comforting behavior. What you want to look for there is, where are her wrists? Are they facing in or facing out? If her wrists are open, facing you, then that's a very open indicator. That means she is, in fact, interested and engaged with what's happening. If she's playing with her hair with her palms facing herself and her wrist inward, well, that merely tells us that she's pacifying. She's passing the time. It's self-soothing. It's comforting to her, which is not a great indicator that she's into you. In that case, you probably don't want to read too much into it.
Would you say whenever you go to a party or an event or just at work that you are the most confident man in the room? Because you give off this swagger that you know things, but you also put out this attitude that you don't care. It's very hard to explain.
When I walk into a room, I am rarely the most confident person in there, but I can fake it. And if it's a social event and there's alcohol involved, I'm going to have a couple of drinks and fake it until I kind of feel it. But I am rarely the most confident person in any room, to be completely honest with you. I just learned over decades of doing this job and being a public figure before Instagram allowed you to label yourself as a job description and such, that you can play the role as the confident dude who's comfortable being there. But nah, man, I'm a little socially awkward. I'm rarely the most, if ever, the most confident person in the room. But I fake it well enough that those of you who are not skilled in the nonverbals, they might buy it. Like, it seems like I got you fooled, which is a good thing.
I think what it comes down to it, because I'm a little bit socially awkward too, and what it comes down to it, Josh, in my opinion, is the mindset. So, for example, if you go into the party or the radio show and you say, oh man, I hope I don't mess it up, you're going to mess it up. But if you go in there, and I used to think the law of attraction was BS, but now I believe in it. If you really go into a situation and you say, I'm going to do the best I can and I'm going to knock it dead, 99.9% of the time it's going to work. Now, you're not going to play in the NBA. You can't say, I want to walk into the basketball court. But if you set any reasonable goal, Josh, I believe you can make it happen.
Yeah, no, there's something really to be said for the laws of attraction. Unfortunately, we live in a society that's looking for the easiest way. They're looking for the shortest point, or the shortest trip between where they are and where they want to be. And, you know, that doesn't work. Law of attraction, what you truly believe, what you want, what you believe in yourself. Yeah, there's something to that for sure. But this common thing of manifesting, you know, I see on Instagram girls that are 25 years old talking about how they're going to manifest the life that they want, the career that they want. They're going to manifest the body they want. And the reality is, you know, in my life and in my career, I know some of the greatest competitors in the history of what they do. I know some of the greatest in the history of their chosen field of endeavor. And the common denominator is, really, they just outwork everybody. They work harder, they work longer, and they never take a moment off. If it's in tennis, they don't take a point off. If it's in fighting, they don't take a round off. So, you know, we have the ability, if you plant the negative thought, like you said, if you think, don't screw this up, we're all much more likely to screw things up. There is the power of suggestion, the basis of hypnosis. If you tell yourself, not only do I want to kill this, I'm going to go and kill this because I'm prepared, I did the work, and someone's going to have the success I want, so why not me? You go and take what's yours. Again, somebody's going to have the stuff that you want. Why not you? Someone's going to have the career that you want, the life that you want. Some folks inherently are more talented than you are, or they're blessed with greater genetic gifts than you may. But the common denominator, again, of the greatest that I know of all time at what they do is they simply just work harder. And the one thing that people can control is their efforts. You can work harder than anybody. You can work harder than anybody if you so choose. And in doing so, that's the one thing they can't do more than you, effort.
Now, over the years of being a local famous person in West Palm Beach, being a brand ambassador, a body language expert, a radio host, and you've seen things, how bad has social media put an impact on everything? Because for me, for example, over the last 14 years of being on it, I noticed that everybody wants things to happen overnight and nobody ever sees the bad days. You just see the perfect selfie. You just see the perfect outcome. You don't see the days that the people put the effort into getting what they're announcing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, and I heard you chuckle earlier when I said, you know, about manifesting, and I guess that's why. Because it is an instant gratification nation. We live in a world.
Yeah.
Look, you know, when I was a kid, you had to wait for the music store to be open, and then you took your money down there, and you had to hope that they had the CD you wanted in stock. If not, they ordered it. It took you a couple weeks till it arrived. Now you want an album, you touch your phone twice, or even you just tell your phone and it will download it for you. Because we get everything we want exactly how and when we want, it is really, really bad for humans when there's any disruption, any delay. You know, road rage isn't about the fact that someone pulled in front of you and almost caused you to wreck. It's the fact that you didn't wave them in, give them permission, and maybe you had to touch the brakes and now you got to reset your cruise control. It's a control issue. Social media, you know, for as much as it's great to connect people and to make people aware of things, it's equally as awful for human beings in the human condition. You know, somebody wrote a few years ago, before really, I think even Instagram blew up. It might have been 2012-ish.
Yeah.
Right before Instagram became, you know, huge and then got bought by Facebook. Somebody wrote, you know, Facebook is where we go to lie to our friends and family. Twitter's where we go to tell the truth to strangers. And at the time, that was right. That's exactly what I, you know, Twitter people would share an opinion on. Facebook is where they would pretend everything was great. Everything was wonderful, great, wonderful. Now Instagram is for everyone to pretend they have a life that they want others to believe that they live. The others believe that they lead. You know, I joke, you know, I posted something on my Instagram story at Josh Cohen Radio. You know, I posted something to the effect, it was a tweet that I wrote. And I said, if you have asked someone in the last 7 days, hot, medium, or mild, take public figure, fashion model off your Instagram, girl, because you a damn lie. You had all these girls that work at restaurants and restaurants whose real job it is, again, bartend to serve wings, but their Instagram claims they're a fashion model or a public figure or an influencer. And it's like, girl, embrace the life that you have, truly what you are, not pretending so you can hopefully impress others. I think a lot of it is for people to try and impress their friends or to make their friends feel less than. It's a status kind of a thing. You know, when I was a kid in school, we knew who the cool kids were and we knew who the uncool kids were. But if a new kid moved to school, you didn't know which he was. You could pretend he was cool. If he wasn't, you couldn't quantify it. Now you've got 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old girls and boys that are making others feel terrible because they don't have the friend count. They don't have the follower count. They don't get the likes. They don't get the same amount of comments. You get parents asking kids, why do you want to be his or her friend so much? They're not even a nice person. And the kid will be like, well, she's got 7,000 followers. Like, children are looking at this as quantifiable cool. It's bad for self-image. It's bad for self-confidence. Social media has people saying things to others they never would in person. Social media has everyone acting like a tough guy, thinking there's no recourse for their actions. And it's got really, honestly, young people feeling bad about themselves. And I don't want for middle school kids to have to feel bad about themselves worse than they already do because certain friends of theirs won't follow them back. Certain friends of theirs won't tag them in the picture they're all in together or like their picture. This quantifiable cool, this aspect of I'm better than you because look at my follower count, look at my ratio, you know, that's nonsense. Kids don't need that. Young people don't need that. And the reality is, you know, even smart adults that have been through it all. I was a public figure, like I said, before the term existed. You know, we were influencers in the year 2000. We were influencers in the year 2002, 4, 6, 8, before social media became a thing. On the radio, you said, try this, buy this, watch this. And the people were like, I trust his taste. His whole career is built on him being honest on what he's into, what he believes we're into. And so they would. That's real influence. Now, some chick with big boobs holds up a thing for Fit Tee and says, I love this Fit Tee. I use my promo code. I mean, I don't know how much influence she had. I mean, yeah, she's attractive. She has a lot of followers, and a lot of them are bots. We know that. You know, we've learned the truth about the Instagram algorithm, what have you. But how many of those people that follow her are clicking over and buying tea? I don't know. We know advertising works, and we know the power suggestion works. Word of mouth from someone you like, word of mouth from someone that you trust, that means a whole lot more. Obviously, then some random post and chick on in social media. Some people say, well, you're jealous, you're jaded. No, I'm not. No. I'm on social media too. I do my part. I engage with the audience. I interact with. But my job isn't to be disingenuous and make a buck or fake. My job's the opposite. All I got is my credibility. All that I have that allowed me to do this radio show for the past 21 and a half years is being honest and forthcoming with the people. I won't endorse anything that I wouldn't buy, that I don't use. I wouldn't endorse anything I don't believe in, because you can't risk all of what you've built and what you've had lying to the audience over a talent fee, lying to the audience over an endorsement fee. It's just not worth it. All you have is your credibility. Otherwise, they're going to listen to something else. They're going to do something else. They're going to spend the time that we're on the radio every day doing something else. And I'm in the business of having an audience that is engaged, that is listening, and that believes in what I'm saying. And the way you get that is by never lying. So much of social media, as you mentioned, is pretending to be someone, be somewhere, or be doing something that you're not. And that's not just bad for human beings. It's really sad for mankind overall.
What type of audience do you have? How would you explain it to people?
The audience is very diverse because, again, I started the show on, Hot Talk FM radio, with the Real Radio duo back in 1999. We started that format in September 99 and flipped it to the Real Radio family in beginning of March in 2001. So there are folks that are Hot Talk folks. There are folks that are Talk Radio folks. There are sports radio folks. There are people that know me from live appearance or events, from a charity event, a social event. There are people that know me from social media that weren't even fans of the radio show. So the audience is a little more female than you'd expect for an ESPN affiliate. And it is a lot more diverse as far as the socioeconomics than you would also expect for sports radio. Sports radio generally skews higher education, higher earning. They've got money but not time, and a little bit older. But because we're, a Hot Talk, real-life reality radio show that also gets into some sports, the audience is much more diverse and younger and also skews in lower socioeconomic and educational demos. I just want as many people to listen along, to laugh along, to learn along with us. I mean, obviously, there's not a whole lot of success in proving how smart you are, but there's a whole lot of success in being engaging, entertaining, and knowing what the people find interesting and what they want to talk and hear about.
I think the one thing you definitely do well on your show is you're not trying to be like a sports expert. Because when you listen to like the national shows that are in like 200 markets, dude, it's unlistenable. These nerds that never played sports that just spew opinions, and then half the time they're wrong about it, and then they never go back on being wrong. Like, that's why your show is entertaining, is because you guys aren't like on top of a mountain going, I am 100% right about everything all the time.
It's not relatable. The number one thing people hate is being lied to. People don't want to be, they don't want to date someone because they're afraid they're going to look stupid. She or he's going to cheat. They don't want to be lied to. People with kids will tell you the most frustrating thing is when your kids got chocolate all over their face and you ask them, did you eat a cookie? And then they say no, and they swear no. Nothing more frustrating than being lied to. So what people want is accountability. They don't want to be accountable per se, but they want everybody else to be. Everybody else to admit, yeah, I was wrong. I got that wrong. That's my bad. Yeah, I told you the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl. I'm an idiot. Trust me, I lost more money on it than you did. Being relatable is every bit as important as being memorable in the business, as you know, of radio, of podcasts, of creating and holding an audience. They don't want to hear you be an expert and infallible. What they want to hear you be is human. They want to hear you be like them. They want to hear you say, I'm an idiot. I totally got that wrong. Much more relatable. It's much more likable. It's much more memorable than the dude who's never wrong and claims that, well, it's not what I said, what I really was saying. Read between the lines, but nobody's into that. Like I said, that's not a whole lot of success or money in proving how smart you are. There's a whole lot of success and money in just being entertaining, engaging, compelling, and memorable. It's really simple. People want to hear about stuff that they can relate to. People want to hear about how the folks that they admire, respect, or had the worst day because everything could go wrong, did go wrong. They want to hear about how you called a woman by the wrong name, or accidentally asked her when the baby was due when she had it 4 months ago, but you couldn't tell because she wasn't back, you know, she can bounce back into shape. They want to hear about the same dumb mistakes they make that you make and that you own them.
Don't you kind of feel bad for those radio guys that are trying to be the smartest in the room and then they get called out on social media and then like they just can't say they were wrong? It's just so sad.
You got to learn somehow. You know, everyone's going to learn somehow. There was a point where I didn't want anybody to know I was wrong about stuff. You know, I was a young guy doing it just a couple of years. What I realized was that's not what the people respond to. That's not what they want. What they want is just simple accountability because they want to like you. They're listening. They want to trust what you're saying. But they want you to just own up. We don't like to own up. You know, if we get pulled over going 70 in a 55, the first thing we tell the cop is, well, what about the cars that blew past me? They're going faster than I was. Well, it doesn't mean you weren't going 70.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that the guy next to you wasn't going 75. Both are true, but you're not being accountable. We hate to be accountable ourselves, but we love it when everybody else does. That's what cancel culture is about. That's what on Twitter and social media, in particular Twitter, calling people out, trying to get them in trouble, trying to get them suspended, trying to get them fired. We want everybody punished. And part of that is because psychologically, we don't want to be punished at all ourselves.
When it's all said and done, Josh, because you're a man that has done a lot in your life, what do you want your legacy to be?
I want my legacy to be, you know what? That dude enjoyed having a good time, and that dude enjoyed if he could help someone somehow, whether introducing them to someone else or connecting them to something that he had nothing in it for himself. He liked to make people's day, and he liked to make people's lives or career go just a little better. He liked to help if possible. That's what I like my legacy to be, I think.
That's a good one. I've asked a lot of people that I interview on here that work in radio, and it's all about like, oh, I want to say how great I was to my audience, and it's all about their radio show. So it's cool to hear like a human side of like a person just saying, I want to be known as a good person.
The radio show is a job, and it can be here today, and it can be here tomorrow. I've done the same radio show at two different places is all over the course of from 1999 through today, hopefully tomorrow, hopefully the day after. But, you know, it's just a show. It's a great vehicle to have some influence to get people to think better, to do better, to chip in. You know, people realize they think they can't help. Well, I don't have the money or the resources to. We can all help. We can all make a difference. There was a guy who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. And when they went to his apartment to, you know, obviously he had killed himself and intentionally had done so. And they found a note. And it said, if one person smiled at me, I wouldn't do this. Apparently, on his walk to the bridge, no one smiled at him. Well, when you think about the influence and difference, you don't have to have money. You don't have to have education. You don't have to have any followers on social media. Sometimes smile at people. You may be the difference in them deciding to choose life over death. You never know. We can all do something to make somebody else's day better, their life better. You know someone you can connect them to that inspires them to want to learn something that will change their life. People get confused about who's influential. We all are. Some folks just have more quote-unquote followers on social media.
Now, for people that haven't heard your show, where can they find it, and why should they tune in?
You can find the show four different ways. If you're in South Florida, we're weekdays live, 3 to 5 p.m. on ESPN 106.3 FM, ESPN 106.3 FM. 3 to 5 live, excuse me. And again, a little bit of sports, a lot of it of life, a lot of it of ball busting, and just being real on the reality of life as it is. You can also listen worldwide on the ESPN app for free. On the ESPN app, you hit live stations, you scroll down to West Palm, you click that, and we'll be there anywhere on the planet. Again, live Eastern time, 3 to 5. If you have smart speakers, Google Home, Alexa, whatever, you simply say, play ESPN 1063. And there we shall be. And then finally, wherever you get your podcast, every day, a couple hours after the show's available in 2 1-hour segments, wherever you get your podcast. And for that, you would search Josh Cohen and the Home Team. And if you got questions about what and where on all platforms of social media, I try to not get myself into trouble. I try at Josh Cohen Radio, all one word, Josh Cohen, C-O-H-E-N Radio. Why should you listen? I mean, if you're into the truth, if you're into people just being real about stuff, if you're into learning a little bit, if you're into thinking a little bit. And if you're into laughing, you know, while we make fun of ourselves and learning how to laugh at yourself, I would suggest taking a little bit of a listen.
Well, Josh, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show. It's one of those moments where, like, I've been listening for like 6 or 7 years when I found you online. So it's one of those moments where it's pretty cool having a guy you listen to on your show. So it's been a lot of fun, Josh.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I had no idea that you'd listened or were a fan or any of that. So I appreciate you saying that. And thank you for having me.
Anytime, bro. Thank you, Josh.
We'll do it again soon.
Awesome. Thank you, bro.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.